It's time for MMA fans to catch their collective breath this week, coming off of three action-packed shows in four nights. This, of course, is the calm before the storm, because UFC 83 Serra versus St. Pierre 2 goes down next Saturday night from the sold-out Bell Center in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. So, MMA-rated radio thought this would be the perfect opportunity to talk about some of the interesting storylines and issues surrounding the MMA universe. And who better than Sam Kaplan of CBSSports.com and 5OuncesOfPain.com to bring us up to speed. What up, Sam?
How's it going, Ariel?
Great to be talking to you, my man. As always, one of the most knowledgeable minds, excuse me, got a little tongue twisted there, in the MMA world.
Oh, you've had a busy couple weeks there, man. That's I can understand.
Absolutely. Just
and congratulations on your affiliation with MMArated.com.
I really appreciate it, Sam. And like all the MMA fans out there, I'm catching my breath. It's been a great couple of weeks for myself, but also for the sport. And I sort of lied in my little intro. I said this was the calm before the storm, but Yama pit fighting this Saturday night. For those that don't cover the sport, you know, and make a living off of it, such as yourself, is there any reason why people should pay to watch this show?
Honest answer, I can't think of any. I know that's not a positive thing to say, but there's been a lot of changes to this card. There's some very, you know, unique innovations they're going to bring to the table with this event, and you know, I think some of those innovations would be better served being introduced to the MMA public on, you know, free television or cable, you know, or pay cable, as opposed to pay per view. It's whenever you're asking fans to put down a large chunk of money a few weeks before a UFC pay per view event, it's really a tough decision for them to make. So, do they go with the proven product, or do they go with the untested product? I think a lot of people are going to go with the proven product. With UFC 83 and George St. Pierre and Matt Serra in a couple of weeks. And so, you know, some of the Legends matches, you know, it's an interesting concept. However, the matchups have been changed so much that it's really hard to get into them and really hard to get behind them. And a lot of the guys in this eight-man tournament are kind of unknowns. And I know that the goal of the tournament is to create new stars, but without free television or any kind of strong web presence or any kind of promotional presence to sort of, you know, get fans excited to see who these guys are and what they can expect, you know, the night of the event. It's really hard to get excited and get behind the actual concept.
Yeah, I like to think that I keep my finger on the pulse of the sport. I had to actually go to their website and check out who was fighting who, because I was totally confused after all the changes. But that all said, I mean, I think that with the rise of the sport and how it's sort of exploded on the scene the last couple of years, everyone from the Bodog fights to the IFL, you can make a case for all of them making this a better sport, you know, as fans and as people who follow it. But this one, for some reason, just totally throws me off. I feel like it's, I mean, the Rio Hero stuff is a whole other issue, but, like, I don't know, something about the way they sort of came on the scene and bringing back these old guys just left me with a bad taste in my mouth.
Well, I like Legends. I like familiar names. It's just that the guys that they're using really aren't, I mean, aside from Oleg Taktarov, the guys they're using as far as Legends aren't really the guys that would be on the top of my list, and I think most fans' list. You know, Don Fry was a guy I definitely wanted to see, but, you know, Don Fry is off the card. You know, Ken Shamrock, you know, fighting top 10 competition, you know, in today's environment, not something that I want to see, but maybe, you know, Ken Shamrock versus Royce Gracie, I'd pay to see that. You know, there's a lot of legendary names that you know, I kind of anticipated would possibly be involved with this card when I heard the Legends concept, that haven't even been, you know, rumored to be involved. So, you know, the Legends concept, I think it's a concept that can work, but you've got to have the right guys, and I'm not sure if Butterbean, Mark Kerr, and Pat Smith are the right guys.
Do you have any idea as to how many shows they will be running, or is this sort of like a case-by-case sort of situation?
When I interviewed Bob Meyerowitz a couple months back, I mean, he made it sound like they're in it for the long haul. However, I'm not sure how long of a haul Live Nation is going to be involved with this concept. I've heard rumors from local promoters in the Jersey area who have talked to Live Nation about Live Nation starting their own promotion that's separate from Yama. So I'm not sure if Live Nation is going to be involved with Yama pit fighting for very long. And if they're not going to be involved, I'm not sure where Bob Meyerowitz and his company are going to get the financing they need to continue this concept and continue this project.
I know you live in that area where the fight will be, or the event will be going down. Are you going to be checking it out or taking a pass on this one?
It's gonna be. I'm gonna be taking a pass. It's just. It's very tough. I've got a lot of things going on. You know, there's so many events to cover. It's just. You know, it's gonna be very tough for me to get down there.
All right. Well, let's talk about some of the great events of this past weekend, particularly the Shoeix Sea event that was down in California on Saturday night. Awesome show, very quick, exciting action, and highlighted by a sort of controversial main event, Suganuma Hammond. And, I mean, everyone, some people are saying that the refs came in and stopped it too early. I actually disagreed. I thought it was a good stoppage. And obviously, referees right now, very hot topic in the world of MMA, coming off of the Ultimate Fight Night show where there are a couple of questionable stoppages. What is your take on the Suganuma victory?
I've retired from questioning the referees. I feel like the referees in MMA are excellent, especially in comparison to other sports, and their job is to err on the side of caution. You know, they're out there to protect the fighters. They do not want to see this sport turn into a blood sport. And, you know, I respect them for that. So, you know, being in their position, when you're very close to the cage and you see someone get knocked around like that, and, you know, you anticipate that next blow that could really hurt them, it's really, your instinct is to stop the fight. So these referees, who are right next to these fighters and have, you know, a pretty good vantage point, maybe they don't always have the best angles, but they see and they hear everything. They're right in there at the point of impact. So, you know, if I respect their judgment. If it's a gray area and they feel like they want to err on the side of caution, I'm all for that. You know, the Suganuma Hammond fight, you know, I would have been fine with whatever John Shorley had decided. If he decided to let, you know, a couple more punches go in there by Suganuma, that would have been fine. In the end, he decided to stop it. I'm fine with that as well. You know, Hammond got rocked early. Then he got that knee, landed him flush, and he was up against the cage, and you know it was going to be all downhill from there. So I didn't see Hammond being in a position where he was going to turn the tide. So I don't have a problem with the decision at all.
You wrote an exceptional article just a couple of weeks ago, one of my favorites of the last year, and I'm not even just saying that. It was sort of on the identity crisis of Elite XC with, you know, ProElite.com, Shoeix XC, Elite XC, and now they're making this transition over to CBS, and really sort of need to get their cards together and go in with one identity. If you can just sort of explain a little more your thoughts on the whole Shoeix XC concept, because it's been a successful one, obviously, in the world of boxing. They've had the Showbox deal. But for some reason, I think maybe because MMA fans aren't used to that concept, these Shoeix XC cards, A, they're not being publicized as much as the Elite XC ones. But B, it just seems as though they're not getting the type of recognition and publicity that they should, even on the internet. Why do you think that is?
Because people aren't familiar with the fighters that are on these cards. You know, fans and, you know, even fans on the internet, they react to names that they're familiar with. They react to names that have name recognition. So they're using a lot of guys that are unproven. Some of them are veteran guys that have been fighting on the King of the Cage level for years and haven't cracked into the top national promotions for whatever reason. And a lot of these guys are guys that are going to be stars in the future. But, you know, there really isn't a strong promotional presence. There isn't enough storytelling telling the audience who these guys are and what's at stake. And, you know, Ariel, I believe you have a marketing and PR background, and I think you know that, you know, when you have a new brand, a young brand, you know, you want to be as focused and centric on that brand identity as possible. You don't want to go out and start coming out with offshoots and offshoots and spinoffs. You want to keep it focused and try to, you know, establish that brand in the mind of the end user.
So if you had your way, would you like to see them drop the whole Shoeix XC name and just call all the events Elite XC?
Yeah, just call Elite XC. I mean, not every card is going to be your best card. The UFC Fight Night cards are usually solid. They're not as good as some of the pay-per-view lineups. You certainly don't get the great main events that you do with the pay-per-view cards. So why not use the, you know, caliber of lineup they use, January 25th, in Atlantic City. I mean, you had Eddie Alvarez on that card. You had Paul Daly, and that was a very, very good card. You had at least some recognizable stars for the fans to grab onto, and I think that might be the best way to go. And just call an Elite XC card. And from Showtime's perspective, you'd think they'd want that Elite XC name, especially with at least four Elite XC cards now going to CBS. You're not going to see as many Elite XC shows on Showtime. You know, would they rather have the Shoeix XC name or the Elite XC name? I think they'd rather have the Elite XC name and sort of capitalize off that, off the exposure that CBS is going to bring to the name.
Couldn't agree more. Being held in small venue doesn't bother me. It's just something about the name kind of throws me off. And I have to admit, as a television buff, the fact that all the shows aren't televised in HD kind of bothers me a little, but I know there's costs involved in all that. One other fight that I wanted to touch on from the Show XC card was the women's match. And I know that, you know, you maybe unlike some other sites, you know, 5OuncesOfPain.com, you guys, you know, you cover the women's aspect of the fighting world probably as much as any of the other main internet sites. Of course, I'm talking about Shayna Baszler's unbelievable victory. I mean, this was, for me, of the last three shows, UFN 13, IFL, and the Show XC, probably the most enjoyable one, just because you never know what to expect from the women. They come out and guns blazing, and I love the showmanship and everything involved in that one. What were your thoughts on the women's match and sort of the evolution of women's fighting in Elite XC? Because now with the end of Bodog, they really seem to be the only ones that are focusing on it.
Well, I was just, I can't go on about how impressed I was with Shayna Baszler enough. I mean, from top to bottom, from start to finish, and when I mean start, I mean from the pre-fight interview to the post-fight interview, she had it down pat. I mean, she knew how she came out and she totally kicked butt. She just dominated that fight, won it in very impressive and exciting fashion. She knew how to, you know, get an exciting finish, very exciting and unconventional submission to really get fans talking. And then, you know, her post-fight interview, you know, a lot of fighters, you know, after their fights are done, they just go out there and they thank a few people and, you know, they get some politically correct answers. But, you know, in order to brand and market yourself, you really got to give the fans something. You got to show them, you know, you got to give a part of yourself to the audience. And I know that's easier said than done, and it's not always the most comfortable thing. But the more you do that, the more a fighter – the farther a fighter is going to go. And, you know, Shayna Baszler really put herself out there and, you know, called out Tara LaRosa, you know, proclaimed herself as the woman to beat in Elite XC as far as female MMA. And I just thought that was a great way for her to go out there and make a statement. She made a statement in the cage and she made a statement after the fight. And I'd like to see more fighters do that.
I know you are a supporter of the female fighting in MMA, but do you believe that there will be a time? Obviously, I mean, let's be real. It's, Tara LaRosa is never going to be as popular as Chuck Liddell, but do you think that there will be a time that they can sort of surpass what the women boxers have done in terms of getting acceptance and having people actually pay money to want to watch them fight?
Well, I think they've already surpassed, you know, female boxing. I mean, name a female fighter outside of Leila Ali. You know, most people can't. I mean, Ariel, I'm sure you can,
right,
but I know there are a lot of people can't, you know, and you can name, you know, maybe 10 to 20 female fighters out there. And, you know, just the interest level and the excitement for female MMA, I think, is much higher than it is for boxing and ever will be. And I think the potential for female MMA to be even more popular is definitely out there. And what I think really needs to happen, though, I think they need bigger matchups on a national stage as far as female MMA. I mean, the best matchups aren't being made. We're not seeing, you know, the top, you know, female fighter at 135 facing the second top fighter, ranked fighter, you know, at 135. And for female MMA to take that next step, we need to see those big matchups, the biggest matchups they can offer in female MMA. We need to see Tara LaRosa versus Shayna Baszler, or Tara LaRosa versus Gina Carano, or, you know, Shayna Baszler versus, Chris Cyborg. You know, we need to see the best of the best in the women's division. I don't think we've seen enough of the top fighters going against the top fighters. At least we haven't seen it on a main national level. I know Bodog had some pretty strong matchups, with the female fighters. I mean, they had Amanda Buckner and Shayna Baszler and Tara LaRosa. You know, they put the top fighters in there, and I'd like to see Elite XC start doing more of that.
All right, well, you know, May 31st, we've got Gina Carano going up against Caitlin Young. Hopefully that, if it's as good as the first time Gina Carano made her debut on Elite XC, if they have a great fight, hopefully that will open the doors.
I think that fight could be better than, Carano versus Kedzie. I mean, Caitlin Young is just a very young, exciting fighter, really good stand-up. So, you know, you've got a good stand-up fighter in Gina Carano going up against another good stand-up fighter in Caitlin Young. A lot of power. You know, Caitlin Young has a lot of power. Gina Carano has the technique. It's going to be a very interesting matchup.
All right. Well, the other big event of this past weekend was the IFL show at the Izod Center in New Jersey. And the IFL, in terms of MMA coverage, sort of like the ugly stepchild, and definitely doesn't get the amount of, I guess, respect that it might deserve, but they've been putting on a great product. I think this last one was definitely an improvement over their most recent show in February. I was actually just listening to Fight Network Radio, obviously Mauro Ranallo, John Pollock doing a great job over there, and Mauro was talking about, it was a great show, great knockouts, great action, but there's just something missing about the IFL product right now that he can't put his finger on, and it's just not getting him amped up like the Elite XC shows, the UFC shows. What's your take on the IFL right now?
Well, I think the missing ingredient that Mauro was kind of referring to is, I would call it attitude. There really isn't enough attitude from the IFL and its fighters. They have some very, very good fighters. Some of the most underrated fighters in the sport are in the IFL, but a lot of them are just too nice. They're very nice guys, you know. You want guys out there that are not only going to make a statement, you know, in the ring, but they're also going to make, you know, a statement in their interviews, whether it be after the fight or on the internet with, you know, when they're talking to websites or blogs. You know, I think they just need to step up that attitude and the excitement element to really get fans, to really get them to make that emotional investment. And right now, I don't think, enough fans have felt enough of a reason to make that investment.
Do you think that one of the factors that is holding back the IFL, the ring? I've always felt that fans need some unity. They need something to say, okay, you know, a basketball game is played on this court, soccer on this field. And now that MMA is being fought, I mean, obviously, I think Japan is a whole other situation, but in North America, everyone is used to MMA being fought in a cage. Do you think that maybe a lot more fans will gravitate towards them if they hold their fights in a cage?
Well, the IFL they strongly believe in the ring as opposed to the cage. And I've talked to Jay Lark and I've interviewed him on the record about it. He feels that, you know, as far as trying to advance MMA and trying to make it more socially acceptable, it's a lot easier to do that when you have a ring as opposed to the menacing look of the cage. And Jay Larkin makes some very great points. I mean, he knows more about, you know, television and boxing and MMA than I'll ever be able to grasp. But the thing that I believe in with the cage, when you're channel surfing and you see the cage, you know it's MMA. If you change the channel, it's going to be because you don't like MMA. But if you see it there, whether it's the IFL, UFC, Elite XC, or whatever, you know it's MMA when you see the cage. And I think that could be what hurt the product a little bit when it was on My Network TV, because you had a lot of people tuning in that weren't regular MMA viewers. They were just tuning in as casual TV viewers, and you know, it's very easy to get the product confused sometimes with boxing when you see a ring. You know, if you see a stand-up encounter, even though it's, you know, if it's an MMA fight and it's a stand-up encounter and it's taking place in a ring, it looks very close to kickboxing sometimes. And with the ring, with the cage, you cannot mistake it for anything else but MMA.
This is a weird time for mixed martial arts. You have the sport continuing to grow, but also a lot of those new promotions that were trying to get a piece of the UFC's action, we're seeing them fall by the wayside. Bodog going down. We've seen what happened to M1. Do you believe that the IFL may be next on the chopping block?
Hard to say. You know, they don't have money past June. You know, that was a rumor for a while. And, you know, and asking Jay Larkin on the record, he did not deny that rumor. And, you know, I think the feeling is within the IFL is that they'll get the money, that they will get the funding they need to continue past June. With this economy and with the way the MMA industry is now, where it's so oversaturated, I'm not sure where that money's going to come from. I don't know if they can do another raise. I think their stock price is very low at this point, and I'm not sure if they have the available shares that could really raise enough money that would, a significant amount that would justify, you know, offering more stock. I mean, it's just so low right now, that price. You know, I don't know what they can do as far as private investments and, you know, maybe getting a major corporation to get involved. I'm not sure if there's going to be a savior for the IFL, and they need a financial savior. I mean, if you look at the SEC reports, they've given out those warnings. They've given out those indications. I mean, there has to be truth in reporting, and they've said that they don't have enough financing right now to go past June. And, you know, they have to get it. I don't know where it's going to come from.
All right, well, the other hot-button issue that I just wanted to talk to you about before I let you go is obviously Fedor Emelianenko. We saw the press conference in October, him signing with M1 Global. Now the split, he never signed the contract. He is supposedly a free agent. Is there anything new to report on the Fedor front?
there really isn't anything all that new. I know that Elite XC had made him an offer, but Gary Shaw has been quoted as saying, Fedor, his people want $2 million. That's not going to happen. They're not going to get that from Elite XC, and I don't think they're going to get that from any North American mixed martial arts promotion. I don't even think they're going to get that from the UFC. So until the asking price comes down, I don't think you're going to see much movement on Fedor Emelianenko, as far as signing with another promotion.
If you were a gambling man, where would you predict he'd end up?
I don't think he's going to end up anywhere as far as a long-term home. I think you're just going to see him maybe take super fights here and there, work with different promotions, work with Affliction, work with maybe, a couple other promotions like that, and just do fights. I don't think you're going to see him sign a long-term contract with a promotion.
I've heard and read from a couple of sources, Dave Meltzer's Wrestling Observer newsletter being probably the most prominent, that they are now talking his camp with the UFC again. Do you think that that's just sort of, the UFC trying to get back in there, or do you actually really believe that there could be a chance that they can maybe settle their differences?
Anything's possible, but I just don't, I don't see it happening, and I don't see it happening for the same reasons as why it didn't happen the first time. It just, the Fedor's management, they want certain things that the UFC is just opposed to, So unless one of those parties changes the way they do business and change some very major business fundamentals that they believe, I don't see how they're even going to get close to a deal.
Is the main thing bringing over, some of Fedor's teammates from the Red Army and all that stuff to get contracts as well?
I think that's a big issue. I think the fact that Fedor wants to be involved with, Sambo, I think the fact that Fedor's management wants, the UFC, they want to use the UFC name for events in Russia, perhaps. I mean, there are just so many things that they want that the UFC just doesn't, they just don't go along with. And if the UFC gives in to Fedor's management and they give him some of those things, then they have to deal with the fact that, a lot of their other fighters are going to come to the table and say, wait a minute, you gave Fedor this, why don't you give us this? I mean, the negotiations with Fedor, just the rumored negotiations got them into trouble with Randy Couture. Randy Couture heard what, they were offering Fedor, when he heard what, Krokop was making, he said, hey, if they're making this, I should be making this. Now, if the UFC were to go out and consummate a deal with Fedor and give him all those concessions that his management are asking for, that's going to open up a Pandora's box as far as when it comes to renegotiating new contracts with their existing talent. So I just don't see it happening.
All right, Sam, great stuff as always. You were one of our first ever guests at JerryPark.com, and now transitioning over to MMA Rated. Great insight, and always a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks, Ariel.